It's time for the TV Talk Machine, episode 91. I'm Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hello, Jason.
How's it going?
I am, just call me Mr. Emmy.
Big week. Emmy noms came out. We knew this would happen.
We didn't.
Originally, we didn't know. We weren't sure. And then we looked it up and
we discovered
that it happened this week.
We didn't know last week, even our hilarious closing.
Listen to the end missed out on our ignorance.
Oh, they missed out a lot at the end there. We just really spiraled. But what we didn't know last week, as we prepped for the Emmys, the coming Emmys, was that it would be so damn good.
I know. I said, it's funny that last week I was saying how I was a little disturbed at how positive and cheery you were. And look what happened. It happened even more so this week.
I know. It's kind of crazy. I don't know if people are going to even be able to handle my positivity.
You're like a little ray of sunshine, like television sunshine. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Emmy nominations this time. We may not have time for many or any listener letters, but that's okay because we're going to, very soon, I believe, we have a double bank week coming up because I'm going to be traveling. So I think next week, and the week after, you might hear a lot of letters. That's, again, a little peering behind the curtain.
Yes. Everybody loves to see how that hand works.
Yes, exactly right. But this, I think I've got some letters sitting here, but I don't know if we're going to be able to get to them. There's a couple who are agitating for a meetup that we might get to. But let's, before we get to the...
agitators.
Before we get to the Emmys, I wanted to at least let you briefly... I think you mentioned it last week, but your review got posted this week. At least let you mention... the A Word again, because you've been agitating all week for this too. Like, people need to watch the A Word. Yeah, you might have. Mr. Robot came back. That was really exciting. We talked about it last week. I saw it. It was great. I'm happy that it's back. But you may have missed the A Word on Sundance, and you wrote basically a rave of it.
I did a huge rave. I even actually, it came out a day late because I spent extra time watching. I watched the whole thing. So I watched all six episodes. Couldn't stop watching it. And for people who, two prongs. One, a lot of people don't know if they get Sundance. Basically, if you're paying for a cable package, you probably do get Sundance. Two, find that, please. Find that channel. Search for it. Also, some people I saw on the Facebook, on my Facebook Bastard Machine page, where people said, oh, I won't watch Sundance because it's not in HD and I only have to have everything in HD. And someone responded, yes, they only get it in HD too on some weird thing. Most people get it HD, but this person didn't. And someone reminded them that if you do it on demand, it's in HD.
That's right. On demand, or like if you've got a Comcast, you can usually go to their site and log in, and then you get HD streams and stuff there too. There's lots of ways to get it if you're not getting it.
Yeah, that's a very smart way to do it too. So anyway, if you missed it, which you must have because it's now Friday, international time, and it's already aired, then go back and watch that first episode. It's a really lovely series. It's completely unexpected. We'll post the review in the show notes, and I can't say this. I mean, everybody was going to, well, based on the ratings, not everybody, but...
Everybody's talking about Mr. Robot. Right?
Everybody's talking about Mr. Robot. They just weren't watching Mr. Robot, which I'm sure. But it's, you know, it got Emmy nominated, which we'll get to, and that will spike things. But I just assumed everyone was going to gravitate to Mr. Robot, who's a TV fan and listens to this or follows me on THR there and Twitter, et cetera. They were Mr. Robot fans. And it was on at the same time on Sundance Channel. So please find the A Word. It's a six-part drama, British drama. It is wonderful. I don't need to say any more about it other than read the review when we post it. And I hopefully my passionate endorsement will get you to go watch it. You will not be disappointed.
You can find the link in the show notes. That's theincomparable.com/TVDM/91. And the only other note I wanted to make about the A Word is it's by Peter Bowker, who did Blackpool, which is one of my favorite weird, unexpected, quirky, fun British miniseries. That was like 6-7 years ago now, but so great. So I'm looking forward to seeing the A Word.
Yes, and I think Peter Bowker and I actually have the same musical sense because both all the great stuff in Blackpool, including Morrissey, and now in the A Word, there is so much great music, so much of it by the Arctic Monkeys, which is one of my favorite bands. Really great. So much fun.
All right. So the Emmys, I'm curious how you want to attack this. So you wrote a piece saying finally they got it right.
Yeah.
You and Dan Feinberg wrote a piece about searching for snubs after the best nominations ever. And then you just before we came on the air, you posted a list of the 25 most pleasant Emmy surprises. So I don't know. How do you want to address what happened at the Emmy? Should we just go by category, or do you want to use one of the organizing principles in the stories you wrote this week? I'm curious how you want to.
Okay, well let's start this way. Let's start at I think the most surprising element, which was it was great. Normally we say the day after the Emmys are announced, what a bunch of idiots. And usually there's an F word in there. I'm sure we'll check the box at some point, but sure. I'm not going to say it right now. So usually it's like, why you dumbasses? Does that check the box?
I'm not checking the box yet.
I don't think so. Yeah. No. You know, it's like everybody gets things wrong. And even on the years, there's been a few years in the past five where they've made decent strides. Strides where I would actually golf clap, applaud it, and say, you know what? Not bad. But they would always have two or three enormous blunders. Well, they're never going to get it perfect, but this is the closest they've ever been to getting it perfect. In my view, this is the best that the Television Academy has ever done since I've been a television critic in the Emmy nominees. And I think they will actually get it better next year. But they were so close. They did so many things right. And so we can start from the point where right there, it's a total shocker. It's the best Emmy nomination package ever, in my estimation. I would say that across the board, yeah, people had snubs. People were irritated about things being left out. But in general, the critics who actually do a lot of thinking about this are in agreement that this is the most surprising batch of Emmy nominees they've ever seen. And I would say that if you are smart enough to know what a snub is and what your dark horse hopeful nominee not coming in is, then this is almost near perfect. And by that, I mean, did I want Leftovers to be nominated? Sure. And it wasn't. Did I want Homeland and Downton Abbey to be
banned
and wiped out of the best drama category? Sure.
Yeah.
And they were still there. But at the same time, The Americans got in.
Yeah.
Mr. Robot got in. I would have liked four or five new entries rather than two, but those are a miracle that the Americans happened. And I will pivot on that in just a second. Also kind of a miracle that Mr. Robot got in.
Oh yeah.
And then throughout, we can hit on some of these points. I mean, I've never, ever had this Emmys buzz to the point where the day I write two columns and the day after I write not only a third column on the Emmys, which is not just like vitriol of me like losing my spleen.
Yeah, that's what I'm used to.
Over how angry I am, right? But me saying, hey, here is a ranked version of the 25 most pleasant surprise. 25! Most pleasant Emmy surprises. That's a stunner. So, you know, for starters, Jason, I've never seen anything like this. I'm stunned. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, so let's hit some of the big categories, because I think that, and you've already talked about drama a little, so let's start there. So The Americans, you wrote a piece a little while ago, we talked about it, about how the Emmys needed to consider The Americans, that you consider this one of the best shows of the last few years, it's at the top of its game, and now is the time for them, especially now that some of the other regular appearances in this category, your Mad Men and Breaking Bad, they've left the stage, it's like now is the time. And it actually happened. The Americans is in there.
Yeah, and I, as I did yesterday, I will take an obligatory victory lap and gloat in this, whether anyone thinks it's deserved or not. I called this. I loved this day yesterday because it could have very. The odds were that it was not going to happen. But part of the reason I love working at The Hollywood Reporter, and yes, this is a little bit certainly a little bit of ego because I feel happy that this actually happened. But part of the reason I like working there was when I was at the Chronicle, I had a certain amount of power, but you're also kind of mixed in with a lot of other people. But if you write for an industry magazine like THR, you tend to, it's a little bit more powerful, and it's a little bit more what I do, which is cover the industry and not just write reviews. Not everybody does that. In fact, fewer people do that now than ever. And you hope that you do something and it actually makes a difference or it gets heard, and you don't know. Well, I know from the past that a year plus ago, I wrote something saying, hey, you need to expand the categories. This is ridiculous. And they expanded the categories, and I got emails from Academy members saying, yeah, we read it, we listened, and we thought it was pretty good advice. They didn't do what I wanted, which was 10. And now, of course, my next column will be asking for them to do 10, which I've less than subtly done in the ones that will be linked in the show notes. But I came out and I wrote a column saying, like, okay, look, the Golden Globes have stolen your thunder, but they reverted to form this year. And now you're at the precipice of this amazing position where you can snatch back your relevance because of the Golden Globes reverting to form and being ridiculous with Lady Gaga, not only being nominated, but winning. And now you have to do what you've, I have not done the research. So when our fact checkers want to do it, I started to do it today and I got back 10 years and I didn't see it. So I don't think it's actually happened. I don't think that a drama that has never been nominated in the first three seasons is then nominated. Huh. Normally it's forgotten forever. So I'm sure somebody might find
I can tell you, I think like Star Trek The Next Generation got the Victory Lap nomination in its seventh year, its final year. And I think The X-Files, that may have happened too, where, right, like...
But did it get nominated for Best Drama?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but I think that's the Victory Lap phenomenon, where it's the show is at its end, and even though it's not as good, enough people sort of like feel like, oh, let's give them a pat on the back for being in the race. But it's been, I don't remember it happening that recently, but I do remember, and the Victory Lap thing, I mean, that really is often, isn't any good anymore. Why are you nominating it now? It's like, well, we feel like, it's served. We want to give it a little wave on its way out the door. And this is not what's happening with the Americans.
No, and it's not. And it's also, it's funny. Well, those are good examples. And the Victory Lap thing certainly is a little bit of an asterisk, but because I don't think there's something that is just like this. But it certainly has happened with actors, and definitely, that's happened a lot. Actors don't get nominated forever, and then they're about to leave, and then they get nominated. It's something we saw in Friday Night Lights, and Kyle Chandler got a win in 2011, even though the series started, I think, in 2008. And it was its last season, and it was last chance to give him the award, whatever. But as far as, and I think that there's, part of it is a cable qualifier too, but boy, I did not know about the which one did you say it was the Star Trek
The Next Generation seventh season got nominated for Best Drama. I'm like, what?
But really?
Yeah,
that is stunning to me. What year was that?
That would have been like 1993 or something like that.
Okay, so way back.
Yeah, way
okay.
back.
Okay, because I went 10 years and I didn't find anything. So thank God you said 1993. Otherwise, I would have said, wow, I just didn't do my research.
Oh, no. This was a long time ago. But I remember that happening. There are probably other examples of that where it's like, but it's not the same. It is the Victory Lap. It is the honor roll of like, you thank you for serving. We're going to finally give you a little nod. You're not going to win. No. But we'll give you a little nod on your way out the door.
Exactly. And I think in what I would call the modern era, which is the last 10 to 15 years or 10 years for sure, it just not happened. And it's just so rare. I mean, it was for me, it was I mean, obviously I didn't do it. I don't actually make the show. I don't make the show great. I don't make the show worthy of being an Emmy nominations, but it was nice to put it out there and say, hey, you know what? If you really want to be relevant again, there's no ifs and buts about it. This is, you have to do this. And it happened. I heard from everybody at FX, emails and stuff. It was really great. People who made the show, et cetera. So it was like one of those times when I think very, very few times when you have concrete proof as a critic that you actually helped something rather than killed it, you actually, you helped something along. And so I'm going to chalk that up this up along with one of my, you know, of the very few times I've actually done something worthwhile or helped along something worthwhile. But just to be clear, I don't make the show. So I get no credit in that area, but to like at least like make some notice. So it was fun and it was a good day. Like I said, I got a good response from people who are at FX and people who make the show. So it was very satisfying for me as a critic, and I'm happy that they got nominated. It's very rare that they would ever come back from 3 years. And not only did they get nominated for the best thing, they finally got their best actor nominations. Right. And that was good. And to me, that was like, I had joked with Dan at some point early before the Emmys, Dan Feinberg, that, I was like, oh, I'll just be happy if the Americans get nominated. But of course, now I'm not. Now I want them to win. And now, you know, and of course we joked, he and I joked like afterwards that like, if you get that nomination, won't you want the actors to get into what that you're going to get greedy. And so, yeah, I got greedy, but boy, I tell you, I got pretty much everything I wanted based on Thursday's nominations. Pretty special.
I remember Roger Ebert saying that the best thing that a critic can do is turn people's attention to things that they find worthy, that ultimately that's like one of the most important things for critics to do. And I mean, I think that's what you do with the Americans. It's not quite the same as an obscure documentary or something, but it was definitely you saying this, you know, why are people not paying attention to this?
Right. It's more rewarding when you can say, hey, everybody go watch The A Word, and then they do it. And then they say, oh my God, I loved it. Or like, it was one of my favorite shows and no one's ever heard of it. And I'm turning all my friends onto it and they think it's great. That's rewarding. It's what's less rewarding is you say, hey, everybody, ABC's The Catch really sucks.
Exactly.
There's no joy in that.
That can be fun, I suppose, on one level, but it's also not. Yeah. Hey, let me take a break briefly to tell you about our sponsor for this episode. Tim, we have a sponsor. Woo-hoo! I know. Mm-hmm. How about that? It's Mack Weldon, which means I get to talk about underpants again. Isn't that nice?
I love all underpants.
Well, I'll tell you, these are underpants you're going to really like. They are the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. Mack Weldon has smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. It's very easy to go and buy this stuff on the web. I bought some underpants. I bought some socks. They have a variety of fancy socks. They're always changing. Stripy numbers. They're very comfortable. I love my Mack Weldon socks. They've got a line of silver underwear. I don't know if you know this, Tim, but silver is naturally antimicrobial, which means it kills all of those little creatures that make your underpants and socks smell. So
wow.
they have silver underwear, they have silver shirts, and so they are, not only can you, I think you may be able to withstand an attack by a werewolf.
Yeah, that's if there's enough silver in it, sure, it can happen.
And also they won't smell, which is pretty great. And there's no risk to trying Mack Weldon. If you don't like your first pair of anything you order from Mack Weldon, you can keep it and express to them your dissatisfaction, and they will still refund your money. No questions asked. So really, no risk in giving it a try. Not only do the underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well, great for working out, great for going to work, going out on dates, living your life, high-quality stuff from Mack Weldon. So here's what you do. I told you that it's easy to order from their website, so why don't you give it a try? Go to MackWeldon.com. That's MackWeldon, MackWeldon.com. And you'll get 20% off your order. Yeah, that's right. You heard me, 20%, by using this promo code TV Talk. One word, TV Talk. Like the TV Talk machine.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Mack Weldon, for sponsoring TVTM.
Absolutely.
Hey,
undies.
Let's go underpants. Sorry, listeners who are disturbed by my mentioning underpants.
How could they be?
I don't know.
Oh, undergarments.
We all have to wear them.
Yep. Uh huh.
Or at least we all should.
Uh huh. Private things, mm-hmm. Wispy items.
Yeah. So let's talk about the other nominees on the drama list here. Mr. Robot, obviously, and you mentioned that the leads in The Americans got nominated. Rami Malek also got nominated for Best Actor in a Drama, and Mr. Robot, talk about coming out of the gate, right, in your first few years on the air. First season, USA, kind of obscure, but a critical darling, and the ratings kind of weren't there and still aren't there. In fact, the premiere, I think, of Mr. Robot was lower than any of the ratings that it got all last season. But here it is on this list as and that I think feeds into your good feelings too, that they would pick something this kind of obscure but acclaimed and worthy, and first year out of the gate put it on the best drama list.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted that show nominated. I thought that was the likely one to get in there. I thought it was actually much more likely than the Americans to get in there. And I'm sure, I'm sure the people who run the Americans and the actors on it don't really care about anybody else. They only care about their good fortune. But I'm sure that maybe a little slice of them says, "Dang, man, we were on for 3 years, and we had everybody saying watch us, and we had everybody saying our actors are great." And then this one show comes out in the summer, and now it's not only is it first year freshman eligible gets into the outstanding drama category, its lead actor gets put in there. Things came a little easier for Mr. Robot than the Americans, but it's a worthy, and you can only do what's in the bank, right, Jason? You can't say, well, you know, does Mr. Robot deserve it? Well, who knows? This season could be terrible and we won't even be talking about it anymore. But the first season was, I think, worthy of being nominated for outstanding drama.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm happy it's there. I will circle back and say one thing about the my happiness about the Emmys. The one part when I talked to Dan and we talked about snubs and disappointments, as much progress as the Television Academy made on Thursday, the one area where they definitely stumbled was really cleaning out the sort of mustiness of the drama series category, because, you know, Homeland is a perennial nominee. It did not, it's better, but it's fun and it's entertaining, but it's kind of 24 right now. It doesn't really deserve to be. I like the show. I watch it. I think it came back from being awful to be tolerable and fun to watch and entertaining, mm-hmm. but it's not qualified to be a best drama series. House of Cards, terrible season. It didn't even belong there last year. And of course, I don't even know what to say about Downton Abbey other than I love everybody who's involved in it and they are really great people. And so like, I'm happy when nice things happen to really good people, but honestly, it's like watching your, I don't know, your unlucky cousin, like win the lottery. It's like all the time, like every year. And right. You're like, oh, good for you. That, no, you're doing great. You know, it's, they're lovely people, but it has no business, nor has it any business in the last 2 or 3 years being in the drama series category. But I do think that since those, except for Homeland, I think everybody will be cleared out of this category by next year.
Yeah, it's, you know, Game of Thrones. Makes sense. It was there last year, so that's I give that a thumbs up. I mean, the two dramas that made me the most happy, I think, over the last year were Game of Thrones and Mr. Robot. So
yeah,
I'm okay with their appearances in there.
Isn't it great? And yeah. and I actually like Better Call Saul, and it's kind of funny because he was such the underdog nominee last year, and now it's his second season in there. And honestly, I don't think I've seen a tweet about Better Call Saul.
No,
I've not. You know, mm-mm. It's like second season. Everybody's like, oh well, of course it's got nominated in the best drama, clearly. And Bob Odenkirk.
Well, it can't be a
nominated.
Surprise if it already got nominated last year, right? It can't be that much of a surprise.
Even though it's kind of miraculous that it has like 2 years in a row and Bob Odenkirk gets in this really super competitive outstanding lead actor category and he's in there. I love how we all just take it for granted. Oh, well, of course Odenkirk will get involved. Are you kidding me? That is one of the most difficult categories to break into.
Hey, let's talk about comedy. Comedy, yeah. I mean, man, you talk about the dramas being hard, but comedy is that's a tough nut to crack too. There's so many good comedies on TV these days.
There really is. And you know what? Here's the thing about it. Here's what I love about partly what the Emmys did today. And again, my very first piece that I wrote on Thursday and we'll have in the show notes is like, wow, what they did was groundbreaking for them. It was in an hour, certainly my career, their best day. And so I don't think you just golf clap that. I think you say warts and all, you say, you know what, you guys, you took, a dinosaur ship and you turned it around. So thank you for that. And this category is tough. So Modern Family got in, and that's the only one you can say, probably shouldn't be there. But if you're an Emmy voter, you could say these guys are like, what, 5-time winners?
Yeah.
So it's almost like a star athlete at the end of his career. It's like a Peyton Manning. You kind of always want to vote for them.
The Emmys used to be all the nominees were Modern Family, right? I mean, it used to be just, it was all inertia.
All
shows that had been there for 3, 4, 5 years. You just, that you could not get them off the list. And this year it felt like Modern Family was the only one that felt like a traditional Emmy pick in that category.
Absolutely, because rubber stamping, as we've talked here on TVTM many times, rubber stamping is the curse of the Emmys. But if you look at this category, the perennial champion, like the Veep, is here. Veep has to be there. Silicon Valley absolutely has to be there.
Yep.
Transparent absolutely has to be there. So those are three of the slots locked
those
up
are givens.
And locked
yeah,
down. Those
absolutely.
Are givens. And after that, the newbies this year are Black-ish. Black-ish totally deserves to be here.
Yeah, I mean, should have probably been here earlier, but
absolutely.
Here it is.
Should have probably been there last year. Master of None, I think.
Oh, my God.
Lovely.
That fills my heart. That's one of those ones that fills my heart with warmth. Is like,
wow, it's just
how did
stunning.
you noticed Aziz Ansari's little Netflix show? You've noticed that show?
And And it's like, and then Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt gets in. And you could arguably say Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt probably should have been there last year.
Yeah.
And so it's nice that it gets a nod.
Although there is, I mean, the Emmys have always loved 30 Rock, right?
Right.
So there's a little bit of that where I feel like it's like, of course, they like it, but they didn't nominate it last year. So
they didn't nominate it last year. And Ellie Kemper didn't get nominated last year.
Yeah.
So when I start talking about how well the Television Academy did is I'm like, OK, you guys woke up. You woke the hell up. Right. You paid attention. You were actually watching television. Good job, everybody. And which is not hard. It's really hard to do that in 2016. It was not so hard to do that in 2000. Because they were just sitting on their asses then and rubber stamping everything. But boy, 16 years later, you got a lot of TV to watch. So Black-ish getting in, Master of None getting in, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, amazing. I don't know who's going to win this. It could be Transparent. It could be Veep.
Got to be Veep, right? I mean, well, yeah, Transparent's got the track record too, but it sounds like...
Actually don't know because at this point, I have to say it could be Black-ish. It could be Master of None.
Could be anything.
Like it's really, it won't be Modern Family. And if it is, I will kill someone. Let's just put that in there. I will fucking kill someone.
Check the box. Right? There it is. Thank you.
Check the box.
I knew you'd get mad enough. I knew you'd find something to get mad about.
I was all positive until you brought that up. Yep. It's all right. Modern Family.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Hey, let's look at Best Actor in a Drama Series.
Yes,
So we got Rami Malek in here. We mentioned that earlier. Like you've said since your first review of Mr. Robot, the show doesn't work without him. He makes
zero.
I think there are a lot of brilliant things in the show, and I think the show is a great show. I don't think it works only because of him, but it certainly wouldn't work without him.
Would not work without him. I think that, look, Kevin Spacey is a great actor. I think the only person who's a weak link in here is Kevin Spacey. I don't like Bloodline. But I love Kyle Chandler, and he is so good in it.
Yeah.
He is so good in Bloodline. I mean, say what you want about the show, and I'm stunned it got a third season.
Yeah.
Really, I could not get through the second season. I just gave up. So I will not be going through the third season, but Kyle Chandler is killing it. He deserves a nomination. And I'm not a huge Rafe Donovan fan, but Liev Schreiber is a great actor.
Yeah.
And he deserves to be in this category too. I mean, you could make the argument that that Blacklist, certainly not the best drama, but that
James Spader just does it.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's got to be there. Thank
Spadering.
You for the James Spader save.
Spadering,
he should be there. Spadering, but Kevin Spacey doesn't. No, he's not. No, that's the mistake. He should not be in this category. So I can only see one flaw here, and it's awesome to look at this and say Chandler, Malik. Reese.
Yeah.
Just fantastic.
And then there's Bob Odenkirk. Sure.
And, who I love.
I know.
Right?
I know.
Of course, we're just taking him for granted now.
It's just hilarious that he's in that category. It's like, yes, dramatic actor, Bob Odenkirk. Mm-hmm, sure. Mm-hmm,
right. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Right.
And we're just taking it for granted. Hell, you know what? You're prompting me to do a fourth Emmy story on my vacation, by the way, because my staycation starts today.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
best. Okay. How did the best drama actresses do? I mean, I have to say, I saw this list and all I really focused on was Tatiana Maslany. Yes, thank you. Please. Yeah. Yes, thank you.
I was happy about that. That's for here's I focused on Kerry Russell because she that's
her well, sure, absolutely.
Nomination. That's like her first. It's Tatiana's second. Mm-hmm. And honestly, here's the weird thing. I think she's got a chance to win it.
Yeah.
But I think Kerry Russell also has a chance to win it because now that you've brought this new blood in, you could do it. Yeah, everybody else is great. Claire Danes is perennial. Taraji P. Henson, Viola Davis, Robin Wright, they're all strong. If you want to look at like dark horses that could upset everything, Kerry Russell and certainly Tatiana Maslany. But I'm not going to argue with that category. Fine. Because those actresses are great. And they're obviously in a little bit more mainstream series in Empire and How to Get Away with Murder. But they're all strong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let me tell you, too, the mainstream network shows here are lead actresses who are black women holding down these categories. And, you know, boy, those roles were really hard to come by for a long time. And seeing Viola Davis and Taraji P. Henson here, that's just, it's great to see that there.
It's such
and they're
it's
holding
such
down
progress.
Mainstream network dramas.
Yes. And as Viola Davis said, it's like, you know what? It's just, we just wanted the chance.
Well, honestly, when you hear about, famously, talk about the Oscars and the film industry in general being so tilted toward white actors,
mm-hmm. Oscar so white.
You see it here. Yeah. Exactly. Hashtag. Oscar so white. You see it here that one of the things the TV can do is have these strong black women as leads in dramas, and it's just like, yeah, that's what How to Get Away with Murder is, and that's what Empire is doing, and it's like, yep, got it.
Yeah.
Right? And providing opportunities for very good actors to be in these roles that maybe they're not getting the film work, but they've got the TV work.
And they're good film actresses. They could definitely hold down a number of roles in the
sure,
film.
Sure, but
again,
if they're not there,
right?
Their TV has the opportunities. Yeah.
Here we are in 2016, Jason, and I think it's I gotta think it's the first time ever we have a person of color is nominated in every single lead actor category.
How about that?
It's not.
There's probably more to be done, and you know, it's certainly not like declare victory and end. But given the scrutiny that the Oscars underwent, to have that says something about the Emmys, but it also really says something about how TV is more diverse as a medium than the movies are at this point.
Oh, absolutely, and I think that you can like, I mean, there might be only one category here where you're like. For example, no one got in here because they're like, we need to be more diverse. Every person of color who's nominated in any of these things is deserved. I think the only one you might actually say, I probably wouldn't have gone in that direction is Cuba Gooding Jr. In O.J. Simpson. But at the same time, you have in that same category, you've got Courtney B. Vance from the same series who should be the odds on favorite. And you've got Idris Elba, you know, back again as Luther, you know, and you got Bryan Cranston and Benedict Cumberbatch and Tom Hiddleston. That just tells you how strong these categories are. And if you and we say I'm talking about the change that's been made in the voting block and, you know, Cranston, Cumberbatch, Hiddleston, those are glory. Those are shiny names that are hard to ignore.
Sure.
Courtney B. Vance has never been nominated. I think he's the odds on favorite. Idris Elba is fantastic. So really the only weak link is Cuba Gooding Jr. And so which is great when you can finally say, hey, great, we've actually got enough, you know, you can't say, oh, he got in here because he's a person of color, because that's not true of if you look at the Emmys as a whole. But this is certainly you can say, he's the weakest link in this group. That's progress.
Let's talk about the best actor in a comedy series. And I mean, this is a perfect example of it. You've got among the people in this category, we talked about Master of None, Aziz Ansari. How about that? Yeah. Like, you know, we saw him, you know, he was an interesting, quirky support player in Parks and Rec, and then he comes out with Master of None, where he and Alan Yang write this show, and he stars in it, and it is, you know, it was amazingly good. But then to see him, this is I think they said that he's the first the first Indian Emmy nominee in a lead category. I think that's what I read.
Yeah, that would not surprise me. That I don't know that, but
our first South Asian nominee to even be broader than that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It wouldn't surprise me. What I loved about his nomination, because first of all, Master of None getting in at all was a shocker.
I know.
And now he busts into the lead actor category. And the thing that I love about that is it corresponds with him sort of Netflix banking on him to be more. They knew and he knew he could be more than a character actor.
Yep.
He's not just a funny guy who comes in on Parks and Recreation. He's actually a guy who is actually funny and can come in. But he's also a good actor in his own way. I mean, you're not going to look at him and say he's like Shakespearean, but you're going to look at him and say, you know, he's so vulnerable and funny and like goofy, and you like him no matter what he says. You kind of like, I like this guy, even though when he's being a dick, you still like him. And I just like to see his experience on television.
And Tom on Parks and Rec was the character he played on Parks and Rec was almost an inversion of the character that he is on Master of None, where
exactly.
He was vulnerable, but he had this whole layer of brag on top of it, right?
Oh,
and Master of None. In Master of None, you see the vulnerability a lot more. He's still got the other side, but that other part comes out. And it's like, in no time, you're rooting for him. Also, he's telling stories that are from a perspective that we don't see a lot on television. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough good things about Master of None, and his performance in it is so great. And if you just saw him on Parks and Rec, you would think, well, who is this guy? You know, but and then you see him here, and you're like, oh my God, he's like an Indian Woody Allen. Where did this come from? Right, and it's like,
right,
yeah,
exactly.
That's right. He's doing like Woody Allen in the 70s style comedy, observational, cutting, smart, urbane, and then he's got this whole other angle, which is the terrible ways that South Asians are portrayed and represented in the world. It's just amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, he's great. And what I love about it is like his breakout this year is so amazing because not only did his own series that he co-created get in, he's in as a lead actor. He's in as a writer and he's in as a director. He's got a director's nomination.
Well, it reminds me of Louis and Louis C.K.
Louis C.K., yes.
And not just in the fact that both of them obviously owe a debt to Woody Allen. They both. I mean, you look at the work they do and you're like, yeah, they're kind of making Woody Allen movies on TV. But it's also about the triumph of part of it is technology in terms of what it takes to make something that looks like a completely professional production with technology that previously would have cost a fortune and now it doesn't, but also the fact that Netflix, for example, can bankroll a show like this and take a chance. And, you know, none of it could have happened even 5 years ago, but you can see now this, when people talk about the democratization of content in the 21st century, they're not just talking about how anybody can have a YouTube channel. They're also talking about how a guy who might have been like a bit player who you saw in sitcoms and he'd occasionally write some sketches for a late night talk show. And instead he got the opportunity to make his own show that he writes and stars in and directs, and that everybody gets to see it and everybody gets to say, this is one of the best things on TV. And that wouldn't have happened even, you know, less than 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's the total miracle on the upside of this platinum age of television is that we have opportunities to have this and other things, whether it's Catastrophe or Casual, happen. And there were so many good comedies that didn't get nominated, and they will get nominated in time. Catastrophe did get nominated for a writing Emmy, so it's happy that I'm going to see those guys actually make it to the, you know, to have Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney be at the Emmys is going to be amazing. But just to close this category quickly, saying Jeffrey Tambor is the odds-on favorite,
sure.
And if he doesn't win, it will kind of be it'll be a total.
Yeah.
It'll be a total upset.
Yeah,
because not only is he good enough to win, he really should win.
Second year for Anthony Anderson in this category too, and he's so great in Blackish.
I love
seeing him back in here.
Yeah, I think that. It could go in any direction. I mean, I was very happy to finally see a Silicon Valley actor get noticed. And what was nice, yeah. Thomas Middleditch is in this category. So yeah, good times all the way around.
Yeah. All right. Best actress in a comedy. A lot of stuff in here too. Tracy Ellis Ross from Black-ish. Nice to see.
She's a first in that category and, in the supporting category and, I'm sorry, the lead category. She very strong. And did I get that right? She's a first in that.
I think so. And
she's the first in that category. So it's good to see her there. Totally deserving. Ellie Kemper, also the first time nomination. Yeah. And, you know, technically you're walking into it's almost like the Jeffrey Tambor situation we just mentioned. You're walking into a category where Julia Louis-Dreyfus is going to win.
Yep.
And she deserves to win.
Yep.
So if you get your ass kicked by her, then it's okay. And if they rubber stamp her victory, I would say I'm happy with that because it's not a rubber stamp. She deserves it. But I mean, the only person I would probably drop out of this category is Lily Tomlin, who's also fine, but I'm not a fan of that show. I think there's too much overacting. And they could have stuck somebody else in this category easily.
I remember Grace and Frankie because you talked about it on the show. I have no memory of getting on where Laurie Metcalf is nominated at all.
Getting on is an HBO series. It's a remake of a British series. I was not a fan of it. A lot of people were, it was their precious baby. But to me, it was just like, you know what? There's so many of these great little tiny little half hours that are really part drama and their dramedies, really. But I know that she's great in it. It's not my favorite thing. But I will say that she made my other list that came out today because she's a triple Emmy nominee. And it pretty just good. Shows the depth of her. She's nominated for a lead actress. She's nominated for supporting actress in a comedy. So she's lead dramatic actress, supporting comedy actress, and then a guest actress. So it's like, what? She's so good.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So what else should we talk about the Emmys? We went through the biggest categories. There's a bunch of other stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the things that stood out for me, are just in quick succession in the main categories, the limited series, category was the one that was really always going to be, it was going to be the toughest. It was going to be the most competitive as far as like acting roles. And I think you got a really good split of choices here. You got Fargo had to be nominated. People versus O.J. Simpson had to be nominated.
Yeah.
I like Night Manager. It's not as, it was for me, it was not as, it didn't have as much gravitas as other shows, but it's glossy and was fun. Getting Roots in this category is great. No Roots actress got nominated, but it made it into the limited series. So, you know, I still think People versus O.J. Simpson is probably the odds-on favorite in this category, although I think Fargo should win it because it's the best series of,
right.
Yeah, it was already number one series. But when you get into the actor and actresses roles in this, it's stunning how many good people were here. We talked about the lead actor categories that had Courtney Vance in it, you know, but if you look at the lead actress in this, I mean, it's like, okay, heavyweights, because you got Sarah Paulson's probably the favorite, but you got Kerry Washington, Audra McDonald, Felicity Huffman, Lily Taylor, Kristen Dunst Kristen Dunst from Fargo is probably the least, you know, probably the least odds on favorite there. But when you get into the other category, for me, the supporting actor category in this one is amazing because not only do you get Bokeem Woodbine, who made my list of 25 pleasant surprises, you have Sterling K. Brown from People versus O.J. Simpson, who's amazing, right?
Yep.
And then they're going up against a heavyweight like Hugh Laurie, who is magnificent in The Night Manager. Whatever I think about that show, there's not a moment when Hugh Laurie is not magnificent.
Can I tell you the ones that made me laugh in this category, though? First off, Schwimmer and Travolta both got nominated. And I haven't seen very much of People versus O.J. Simpson, but my impression is that neither of those roles were particularly applauded.
No.
And so it's like, well, but it's Travolta. I'm like, okay, I get it. And it's David Schwimmer. I'm like, okay. And then the other one I wanted to mention is Jesse Plemons, who I haven't seen Fargo, So I can't comment on it other than to say that I will always applaud Landry from Friday Night Lights in whatever he does.
You know, the weird... Good job, Landry. I agree with you. The weird thing about this category is, look, first of all, getting Sterling K. Brown in here was essential.
Yeah.
That had to happen. Very distant long shot was like maybe the Emmys will have some kind of vision and get Bokeem Woodbine here, and they did. So that's I'm gold.
You're good at that point.
Right? But Travolta, as a lot of people were saying, was basically playing a character in another show that other people were not involved in. Schwimmer was a character, a Kardashian, who is the saddest of sad sacks. And then there's the whole Kardashian element that they chose to get into about Kimmy and her bed. Don't kill him in Kimmy's bedroom. All that stuff. Plemons was good. I got to say, Plemons was good in Fargo. I have to admit, I think I've already said this on this show, that when I watched the pilot, I thought, oh my God, he's doing amazing work in that fat suit. And it was not a fat suit.
Why'd you have to lash out like that? Sorry, Landry.
You know what? No, he put on all the weight because they said, look, you're a Hollywood actor. He was still kind of, he wasn't like chiseled, but because he's Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
But they said, you need to be like Midwestern. You got to be a little bit more.
Corn-fed.
Fargo. You got to be corn-fed. Oh my God, he took that to heart.
Yeah.
So he was huge, but his character was, he was good in that. I think your odds on, I don't know, I mean, no. I think the three that are the most deserving are Laurie, Woodbine, and Brown. If Woodbine won it, I would flip out my window. That's what I would do. I would crash out the glass and land on the sidewalk.
So I wanted to mention the Variety Talk Series category because it's really interesting that not only did Stephen Colbert did not get nominated, The Daily Show did not get nominated, but James Corden did, John Oliver did, and Jerry Seinfeld got nominated for Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, which allows us to say, crackle, you have an Emmy nomination.
Yes. Well, here's the year of, first of all, I love Comedians in Cars.
It's so great. It's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's really great. It is.
I want David Letterman to do a show like that. I don't care what it is, but it's like, I do a streaming show, David Letterman, with your funny beard.
You gave me a greatest idea that I'm going to steal. Look, all our listeners will know that when I write this column, it was stolen completely from Jason.
Okay.
That is a great, he needs to get on a show and I would love it to be low key.
Whatever. It can be about whatever, right? But just get yourself a streaming show, David Letterman.
Yeah. So this
just mess
this
around
series is pretty, it's so much fun.
It is. The pressure's off.
The
you can just do whatever.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as I said in my thing with Dan, I was like, not only is this the, like, one of the most inspired choices of all of the nominees.
Right.
It is like, I wouldn't even have dreamed that that was possible because not only do they knock Colbert out of it. Right. But, you know, you also don't have, you got Bill Maher in here. Yeah. You have to do that. But this Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee knocked out Colbert.
Yeah.
I didn't think that The Daily Show had a legitimate shot because I don't think it's a very good series, but I definitely thought Colbert had a shot. He's an upset for sure. Real Time is probably, I would trade Samantha Bee.
Oh yeah, God yes.
In a heartbeat. Last Week with John Oliver is the one I want to win this category, but or Kimmel, because I'm a big Kimmel fan. Real Time I would swap out for Samantha Bee. I think she was a snub.
Yep.
And also, I hate to say it, I would much rather have Seth Meyers in there than Jimmy Fallon.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So those are the two changes I would have.
I think a Corden thing is interesting because Corden, I mean, this is the knock on Colbert lately, and there's been a lot of talk. I'd like to talk to you at some point about what's going on with Colbert because he's made some changes and some people have, they brought in producers and other producers have left, and there's lots of kind of consternation about what's going on with that. And Corden, though, you know, airing an hour later, is, you know, I don't know how well he's doing ratings wise, but certainly in terms of capturing the zeitgeist, because he's got the carpool karaoke, because he's really good at the viral video stuff, he's winning on that front. And so to see him get nominated and Colbert to not get nominated is a really interesting development.
It is. And this is where, this is probably the most controversial category. And it comes at a time when a lot of people are guessing. I want to make that clear. That they're guessing that CBS wants to flip the two of them and they want to move Corden up and Colbert back. And while I think that that makes a lot of sense in their personalities, because if there was ever more of a sort of a Johnny Carson type character, it's Corden. He's lovable. He's likable. Stephen Colbert is not, he's not that way. He's lovable and likable, but in a different way. He's intellectual and he can't hide the fact that he's an intellectual. And we are not an intellectual country. And I think that people turn against him for that.
Is he going to get, is he going to get Conan'd? I mean, we should talk about this.
No, I don't think he will. People are saying that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think CBS loves him and they're going to invest in him. I do think it's telling you. Should we do the breaking news?
Yeah.
I think it's telling that today, apparently, he made it. He dropped a hint somewhere that he's going to bring back his Colbert Show persona.
Oh, interesting.
That is amazingly interesting.
Hmm.
Like that. Like, what are you thinking? Like that? Really? That's the level of desperation. Not on the on unless CBS pushed him to do it. But if it's on his part, what? Like, the reason the show has struggled so far is trying to distance yourself from that. And also trying to find its rhythm separately, but woo!
Apparently, Jon Stewart's gonna be on The Late Show, reporting from the conventions for Colbert, too. So that's a win, right? Stewart's listed as a producer. I don't know. I don't want to see him, like, abandoning real Stephen Colbert for fake Stephen Colbert.
No,
I do have to say, and there was a piece, I forget where it was, but there was a piece about Colbert not too long ago that said, you know, asked the question of, like, who is Stephen Colbert on his show now? And it's kind of unclear, like, are they trying to make him into something he's not? And, like, have him be sort of expansive and I love everybody and I'm not going to be, I'm the non-threatening talk show host, because that really doesn't work. Like, if you wanted to hire non-threatening talk show host for The Late Show, you shouldn't have hired him. But the last thing you want to do is take Stephen Colbert and then make him like this kind of generic guy, because then nobody wins. Now you've got a very talented guy doing something that he's not good at. It's like, if you're going to hire this guy, you got to let him do what he does. And they are in danger. I mean, honestly, I was watching Colbert, or at least some large chunk of Colbert, almost every day for about the first 6 months he was on the air, 4 months he was on the air. And since they've made a lot of their creative changes, I can't watch the show. I find it kind of uninteresting and unwatchable. So I think whatever they're doing, they're messing it up.
Wow.
So,
and I think that's because they don't know what
they don't. They don't know. They don't know. Well, in fact, they brought in that new CBS, had them bring in that new producer, and they assured everybody that all the other producers' jobs were secure and nobody else would be leaving. And then one of the most senior producers on the show was ejected like a couple of weeks ago. This is a bad sign. So maybe they can get their mojo back with the conventions, right? I mean, that if we're going into the presidential election cycle, you know, you want to be relevant. That's why Seth Meyers is so interesting right now, is that he's way more relevant about this stuff and good at it than Jimmy Fallon is, and then James Corden is going to be, and, you know, and Colbert can do that. So and he has the luxury of being able to do that every night, which Samantha Bee and John Oliver, as good as they are, they have to wait a week for everything.
Yeah. It's there's interesting things going on in the late night field. I will say that
there's a lot going on. Hey, I also wanted to mention Variety Sketch Series, another category. I love that they broke these categories up, because there you got Documentary Now.
Yep.
You got SNL, sure, but you got Amy Schumer, who was also nominated as a performer. Key and Peele, one last victory lap for Key and Peele.
They need it. They need to get this victory.
Yeah. So that was that's
and Portlandia. Look, no one's talking about Portlandia. I love the, because Saturday Night Live's a perennial.
Sure.
But and now kind of Portlandia is also a perennial. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a series that doesn't get the respect it deserves. Yeah. I mean, excellent work to get renominated in this category. But I think that you've got to go Key and Peele here.
Yeah.
That totally has to happen.
So what have we missed? Anything else we need to...
Well, you know, here's the thing. We talked a little bit about, well, a lot of things. But if we switch over, just because we've touched on a lot of these already, but if we switch over a little bit to the column that I wrote today on these 25 pleasant surprises, you know, we've touched on some of these things. But let me just... We'll just go numerically. I want to move up to 7, which is Louis Anderson.
Oh, yeah, and Baskets.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that, and you know, it's funny because Dan Feinberg is a big fan of Baskets, and he's watched it all the way through to the end. I watched the first 5, and it wasn't enough for me to get hooked. I think it's got bright spots, but I think that, you know, Zach Galifianakis is not, his character is not likable. And to me, and it's not funny enough to keep me going on it. But I will say, even in my initial review of it, that Louis Anderson as his mother, Christine Baskets, was the most inspired casting. And it brought out in Louis Anderson, who's been around for a really long time, in doing a lot of not very good stuff. I mean, he's a great comedian, but his acting stuff has not been that great. He's branched out now where his acting is amazing in this. And it's just a hilarious character. I would tell people who are listening right now, Google Christine Baskets Mother's Day Advice, because that's Louis Anderson's character. And then stick with it. There's like 10 of them. You might only one or two might pop up on YouTube, but there's a little arrow, click, toggle back. There's like 10 of these things, 10 or 12 of these things. So it's Christine Baskets and her, and they're like 30 seconds probably. And you get a sense of how great he is as this character. So Louis Anderson was a stunner. Mm. I mean, it's just a stunner, Jason, as a nominee.
Well, I mean, Baskets alone being nominated for anything, I would say is a stunner. And then to have somebody in the supporting actor category nominated, yeah, surprising.
It's crazy. And then my I think that Louis Anderson and Bokeem Woodbine were like my Christmas came early for me. Like, mm-hmm. Not in my wildest dreams that I think either one of those guys would get nominated, especially Louis Anderson. But Horace and Pete, this is where when you look at a cross section of post Emmy nomination stories and you see people saying, "Oh, I wish this happened," I got to tell you, and I won't name names because they are my peers, a number of these people wanted things to win that had no business winning. Like, they literally had no business being nominated, right? So they're like, "Well, I can't believe they're so-and-so's not there." Well, look, I wanted Catastrophe and Casual and all these amazing series to get, sure, but I didn't think they were going to get it.
Yeah, You're the Worst. I'm not surprised it didn't get nominated, although
right,
I would have loved it.
I love
it,
You're
right?
the Worst, but it's not there.
No.
Look, we're 11 seasons into It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I still want it to get nominated. I have no hope that it will ever get nominated. So we're past that point. So for Horace and Pete, Louis C.K.'s series, dramatic series, which is hilarious because it's on www.louisck.net.
Yep.
Now that's a double nominee in the Emmy category. That is completely stunning. And so people who say, "Oh, he should have got," well, yes, he probably should have got more. But just that the Emmy voters who do this thing that happened on Thursday, that they were actually self-aware enough to know, A, what Horace and Pete was, and B, willing to say, "Okay, Horace and Pete has no voting block, zero voting block within us. And yet we're going to put it in for these two categories, one of them being a major category and guest actress appearance that Laurie Metcalf got nominated for." Dude, this is a revolution of the Television Academy. So make no mistake about it. It's a stunner that Horace and Pete was nominated. So that's a big one. Catastrophe, which I wished could be on there, made it into the writing category for comedies. We've touched on most of these other ones. Courtney Vance and Middle Ditch and even Ellie Kemper getting in. Two of them that I had on my list in a row are Melora Hardin, if you're a fan of Transparent. She was Tammy, who was very polarizing and a tough figure. And she was a stunner. And like, I included her on my list, Jason, because if you think about, she's a guest actress in a comedy series. And you think, okay, well, that's, anybody can get in that category. Can't they? Can't they be nominee? No. First of all, it's incredibly hard. And here's her comment. If you ask anybody on the street, who's Melora Hardin? What? They're not going to know.
No.
Even if they watch Transparent, they probably won't know who Melora Hardin is.
No, they might. They might remember her from The Office.
Right.
Where she was just recurring on The Office. She wasn't even a regular on The Office. Yeah.
But her competition is the combination of Tina Fey and Amy Poehler as SNL hosts. Well, I don't know if they've got a chance to win, but I think pretty good. Amy Schumer, Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah. Who?
Christine Baranski,
huh?
And the aforementioned triple nominee, Laurie Metcalf. Those are the other nominees. And then you have this outlier in Melora Hardin. So I'm like, I love that pick. I love it. Like, who thought that? And how many people thought enough about that to get her in? It's amazing. Olivia Colman, the British actress, should have been nominated for Broadchurch.
Oh, yeah.
But she's in supporting actress for The Night Manager. Mm-hmm. which she played while pregnant, and she's amazing. Originally, that was the role for a man, by the way. So I really hope she makes it. Separately, I was happy that Making a Murderer was nominated for documentary.
Yep.
If you get the whole country talking, I think it came out in December, right? Yeah. Really late December.
No, it was like
Christmas.
It was like people were going on their holiday vacations, and this documentary about a guy who was falsely accused of a crime and then maybe also committed horrible crimes is just like everybody's talking about it. It's like, happy holidays, everybody.
Yes. And this is I think we've briefly touched on this at one point when I said I was like, dude, I was desperate for a little air, a little non-television air. And to come up during my vacation, yeah, quote unquote, and everybody's like, oh my God,
Making a Murderer.
I'm like, no, I'm not watching that on my vacation. So that's here. It was a great pick. Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, which we said should have probably got into that category. They got in for writing, so that was nice. It warmed my heart that in the Variety special category, Triumph.
Yes.
My cold heart. The Triumph, the election, Triumph's election special on Hulu got in. So the Triumph, the insult comic dog and his cigar, are nominated. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I know you like,
yep,
is in for both. It's got three nominations, maybe four.
Yeah, because it's a musical, there's an original music and lyrics category, there's a choreography category, and there's the title theme category. So
I think there's some editing was the fourth category, yeah. But Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I know.
Literally no one watches this show. Yeah. It's on.
It won a Golden Globe, but nobody cares.
It did. And we were hoping that that would a rollover into the Emmys it didn't.
No.
But if you're going to pick just to be clear here for everybody how odd this is and how surprising this is, or as I say, pleasant. If you're going to pick a CW show, it's going to be Jane the Virgin.
Right.
But Crazy Ex-Girlfriend gets four. Well, they're small categories,
the advantage of being a musical, and therefore having some leverage in some categories where there aren't a lot of. But again, worth it. I think good choices here, because when you're doing two musical numbers every episode, then yeah, maybe you should be recognized.
You're doing
for
something
that.
Right,
yeah.
and she's super talented. And my last pick in because we covered most everything else. My last pick in this 25 surprising is that I clearly I'm not a huge fan of the reality series, which they've chopped up into, I think, a better way where you've got competition and you've got now structured. I love that structured reality program. So in the structured reality series, you've got Lip Sync Battle. And you know what? That's a fun show. To me, it's like this is where you take something very simple, which was basically from Jimmy Fallon's late night show.
Yeah.
We do a lip sync battle. We turned it into an entire series. And you know what? If you got a half an hour to burn or whatever, it's fun. I think shows like that should be rewarded, because that to me is an old school. You're flipping around the dial. You're late at night. It's in reruns, or you're hungover and you hit it just right. And it's lip sync battle. There's nothing to think about.
Well, now
so I was happy to find them in there.
Now I've heard everything.
You have heard
it. Tim has recommended a lip sync battle.
Hey,
let's move on from the Emmys, and we don't have a lot of time. We've been here for a while, but I wanted to at least get in a couple quick letters, and we'll roll the rest over until next time.
Okay, can I pull a?
Are you Columboing me now?
Yeah, can I Columbo you?
Yeah, okay.
Just really quickly,
yep.
I know this is one of our longer episodes, but I think people will go with it because we really went through a lot of stuff.
We got big breaking news.
Exactly, we had a lot of stuff. I think it would be it's worth a Columbo. I think it would be behoove us, or at least me, to quickly go through some of the ones that we were considered snubs. Should we do that?
Oh yeah, okay, sure. If you want, I was showing pity on you for having talked for almost an hour. But yeah, let's do it. Let's get into the snubs. Let's
I will just
let's
go
turn
quickly.
It negative. Just why not?
Let's go negative. Our favorite place to be. We live there.
Yeah.
Hello, Negative Land. You know what? Negative Land, also a musical reference Indy Sarah will get. Here's the thing, though. I want to preface this by saying. I tried to make when I talked to Dan, and Dan and I had this back and forth, and we'll have it listed in the show notes. When I tried to make this distinction was, what's really an upset rather than a show you really kind of wanted to get nominated as a dark horse, and it didn't, and you're a little bit, unsatisfied.
Yep.
Right? Based on this historic day when the Emmy voters really got it right, talking about snubs, I would say that probably the biggest snub, I mean, we talked about some of it when we talked about Colbert and others, but the biggest snub has to be Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, just absolute, like,
isn't that
just
a show that's
on.
Miscategorized too? Is that part of the
it
problem?
It was miscategorized. It's really a drama, not a comedy. But it's, you know what? We had big, and there needs to be a clean out of the drama category. So maybe it'll shift over, but no matter how you slice it, for it, the show itself and the writers and the, actors, and actresses, mostly actresses, it was a bad day. Thursday was not a good day. You know, you've got to clear out Homeland and Downton Abbey and all that stuff to get to it. I think Leftovers is arguably a series that was you can be argued as a snub. I'm a big fan of both seasons, but I also am like realistic, and I didn't really think it had a shot. I do think Jane the Virgin was a snub, and Matt should have got there. Certainly Gina Rodriguez and Jaime Camille should have been nominated. You could definitely make an argument that Oscar Isaac and Show Me a Hero and the limited series were snubs. And if you can't sneak Show Me a Hero in as a limited series, you have to get Oscar Isaac in there. I mean, you just do. He was so fantastic, you know, in that realm. And, you know, we'll put the link up and you can read Dan and I going on and on. And we even got to the point where we're like, wow, everything, I don't have that much to complain about. You know, I wish that Samantha Bee in Full Frontal was nominated, or I would say stuff like, and I really wanted Happy Valley nominated, but really that's the extent of it. It was very brief. There's not that much that you can really be pissed off about. So that is our snubs.
Right. It's not so bad. Like I said, I had a little tiny hope that there would be a surprise and we'd see You're the Worst somewhere, but I didn't really expect it because that's a below the radar kind of show.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so we got a couple letters to read before we break, and they're related. So Dean of the 707, with his travel updates, not I think traveling quite yet, but he says this is a ways off, but it'll come quickly. We'll be at the end of our church and bar journey toward the end of December. I need to go to my California bar on December 19th, 20th, or 21st, the Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday before Christmas. I know that that's a hectic week for everyone, but I was wondering if a TV Talk Machine meetup could happen then. I have connections in Healdsburg, so we could do that, or you know, we could perhaps set it up somewhere else. Anyway, he said someplace with a great wine list, not that Tim cares. He knows you so well. Let me know if this is a possibility in the world of possibilities. And then Design Geek Jess from the 415 says, I'm doing my best to live up to the Design Geek Jess moniker by living in the Design District. I pass by the 21st Amendment on the way to and from work, so I'm looking forward to the TVTM Happy Hour. And then she's got a question about the Olympics. We're gonna table that for later. But this is what I wanted to say is, what do you think? Should we say that we're gonna try to angle to meet people in December? Are you going anywhere? And right the week before Christmas, you around?
I am not. I am usually around. It's a little hectic. It is hectic. Family and
it's
shopping
true.
And nonsense like that.
But maybe
but
like
it
a
is not a bad time.
Maybe like a Monday night where there's not much going on. I don't know.
Sure, and I do have connections at 21st Amendment where we could...
The challenge with that week is that a lot of times companies will do like holiday parties and holiday lunches, but that's so late, the actual week of Christmas, that it might not be. So
that's true. So the week before, you're thinking the 18th or something?
Dean says he'll be around 19th, 20th, and 21st of December, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay.
So maybe we'll target that. I don't know. We're not making any promises, and that is far off, but I think Dean is very wise to say it will come quickly.
It will come quickly. And I think it's since you and I have done this in other forms in the past, and it's key if we're going to get people there that kind of has to be on a BART line.
Yes.
So
yes,
San
we need
Francisco
to have some good,
would work.
Good public transport options.
Mm-hmm. San Francisco would work because that could get our South Bay and North Bay and East Bay people all in the same area and home. So that would probably work. I know a lot of people who are in San Francisco like loathe transferring over to the East Bay because it's a foreign land.
So
for
provincial.
Them.
I'll tell
so
you.
So provincial.
A lot
and
of
we can't get our
East
British
Bay.
Friends to come. And we have so many British and Canadian friends.
It's
they
true.
Actually won't be able to make it unless they're here.
Unless they happen to be visiting.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? If one of the Brits or one of the Canadians was here, well, my God.
I can't
it'd be
even.
So much fun.
No.
It'd be so good. Can you imagine if like one of the hot French speaking women who are fans of the show who have not shown their face and raised their hand and said yes or sent a letter in?
Those,
I just have to admit
that
they're
real,
out there.
Are those
real?
Or are those fantasy letter writers that you've got?
I think they're real. Same thing with Latin America. I like to think that they're real. But we could get whoever shows up would be fun. But yeah, I think December might
Maybe
be the time.
That's like lowers the bar for us in terms of planning. Like, hey, you guys have 6 months to get.
Well, it's also nice to think about getting it. Yeah, well, it's
5 months away.
Because I don't go to LA until to January. So yeah, so why not? Like, I think let's shoot for that. I think San Francisco would be the best location.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. Well, we'll look into it. So Dean of the 707, maybe it'll be the TVTM salutes Dean. His last bar will be the bar where the TVTM meetup happens, and we'll get some listeners there with us. But so keep everybody check your calendars and let us know what you're thinking about that. And we'll have a lot more letters next time. But I think we've done enough Emmy talking for this week. Don't
well, they, every year when it's both the nominees and then it's the actual Emmy nights, those things that are circled around that time of the podcast are very busy.
There's big stuff happening.
Big time for TV.
Lots of stuff.
And we are a TV talk machine podcast.
That's true. That's true. We are all those things with a box, our box firmly checked. And our release simultaneous and worldwide. All right.
Yes.
So this is what you need to know if you want to reach us for next week. Like I said, we're probably going to be reading a lot of letters next week because I'm on vacation the week after that, and we'll probably record two episodes. So it's a good time to email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or post on our Facebook group, facebook.com/tvtalkmachine, or just tweet at us at TVTM, and we get those. And then you can also tweet at us separately if you really want to. I'm Jay Snell, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it.
Woohoo!
We're at the end. So thanks to everybody out there for listening. Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
You bet, buddy.
And we'll see you all next week.